with a whole lot of truth. Remedy Revolution is here for you.
And now here's your host, Aaron Page.
All interviews presented on the Remedy Revolution podcast are designed to provide information and inspiration only. Guests of the podcast may present opinions and anecdotes which are solely their own. And as always, before beginning any treatment protocol, please consult with your preferred medical provider. Hey everyone, this is Erin. Welcome to the Revolution. Today's guest is a wonderful person who is a medical doctor. He has been fighting for medical freedom. He has been very vocal in the state of California, my home state, which I am sometimes reluctant to admit. However, he's also the co-host of a wonderful podcast. You should all check it out, called Informed Dissent. Please welcome to the show, Jeffrey Barkey. Dr. Jeffrey Barkey, it is a pleasure to have you. Welcome.
Aaron, great to be with you. I've been following you for a while, and I'm sorry you were forced out of California. I totally get it. I'm still here fighting the fight. And we talked a little bit off screen about what you do, and we can touch on that as well. And it's great to be with you, like-minded people from across the country.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you get into all of this? I know most medical doctors obviously are very classically trained, traditionally trained, pharmaceutically trained, and you know, having a conversation about homeopathy is not something that I'm used to having with medical professionals. And so it's a breath of fresh air. But how did you get started into all of this, and what brought you into that space?
Boy, it's a good question. It's been a little bit of an evolution, and I'm new to the field of crunchy medicine. So for your listeners, this is new to me, this term. You call somebody crunchy, it means they're holistic. And I'm newly crunchy, right? I wear the white belt in crunchiness. So early in the pandemic, I was like everybody, scared, confused, groceries outside the door spraying everything down with Lysol, wondering what the heck was going on. Within a couple of weeks, I realized there's something more to the equation than what we're being told by the mainstream media and even our healthcare institutions. Spraying stuff down with Lysol for a viral illness, isolating the healthy, closing down our churches and our schools and so forth. So I was asked early in the pandemic to come out to Riverside. For those of you not familiar with California, or particularly Southern California, I live in coastal Orange County. I live on the coast near the water. Riverside is, I don't know, 60, 70 miles inland from the coast. I was invited to go to Riverside because the County Board of Supervisors for Riverside was hosting a meeting, or about to have their meeting, and they were going to make a determination whether or not to open up Riverside County. This was when everything was closed. And so I was called and, hey, Barkey, you want to come out to this rally? And I said, no. Why would I want to drive to Riverside of all places? I don't go to Riverside. No disrespect for people that live in Riverside. But normally it would be like an hour and a half drive to drive out to Riverside from the coast. But then I realized who was putting on this rally, and it was a person who was near and dear to me and is always in Orange County supporting the things that we do in Orange County. So I said, yes. This was in the middle of the week. To Riverside I went. Now, the freeways were empty at that time because everything was closed. And so I was out there in like 20 minutes rather than an hour. And when I got there, I was asked to speak. There is, I don't know, a few hundred people outside the Board of Supervisors office, little stage area, and I was asked to speak. And I did, 5 minutes or so. Shortly thereafter, that speech that I gave was uploaded to Facebook and social media. And within a few minutes, I was getting phone calls and messages literally from all over the world, from media outlets, physicians, prospective patients, and so forth. And I didn't really think what I said was particularly meaningful or impactful. But what I did say after I rewatched it is I always carry a copy of the Constitution with me. I have one here somewhere. But it's usually a Hillsdale College copy of the Constitution, where my son went to school and I'm affiliated with at my charter school that I founded. And I held up the copy of the Constitution, and not my line, from somebody else that I got. I said something like, this document was never designed to restrict we the people. This document was designed to restrict the government. And I guess that really resonated with people because what was going on was a complete obliteration of our constitutional rights. We've never closed churches before in the United States, yet we were closing churches, First Amendment violation. We had never closed hospitals before and told people they couldn't go to the doctor for well care, yet we were doing that. And we had never, ever, and it doesn't make sense from a public health standpoint, to tell healthy people to isolate themselves and stay at home. And that's what we were doing. So I started speaking out, and it wasn't, I didn't have some desire to be an activist physician, but suddenly there I was. And I realized that what I was preaching about, what I was saying, was resonating and represented the perspective of hundreds of thousands of doctors and patients, and likewise in our country and around the world. So fast forward a little bit, our office stayed open throughout the pandemic. We never mandated mask wearing. We never required masking of our employees. We never required anybody to be vaccinated. We remained open and sane and followed what made sense from a medical standpoint. Along the way, I was missing a medical assistant. The assistant that was working with me got pregnant, went out on maternity leave, decided she wanted to be a mother. Good for her. She's a great assistant. So I needed a medical assistant, and they were very hard to find in the middle of a pandemic. So I posted something on social media about needing a medical assistant. And a friend of a friend introduced me to this gal who was about to be fired from Kaiser, 17-year career at Kaiser as a medical assistant. And she didn't want to get vaccinated, didn't want to use a religious exemption. She felt it was her right to refuse a medical intervention, especially one that was under emergency use authorization and experimental. And then they said to her, okay, fine, but we need to test you every day. And she said, test me every day. I'm not sick. We don't test well people. We test people that are sick to identify what's wrong with them. And no, you're not sticking an ethylene oxide sterilized Q-tip up my nose on a daily basis. I won't do that. Long story short, she ultimately got fired, single mom, didn't know where she was going to turn, had rent to pay, et cetera, left it in God's hand to figure out a path for her. And shortly thereafter, she started working for me. She worked for me for about a year, now lives in Texas, outside of Dallas. While she worked for me, very crunchy, vaccine injured child who she learned from, kids now 15, she opened my eyes up to question everything that was settled science, from antibiotic use to statin use to vaccine safety and so forth. And that really set me on this journey to learn and unlearn everything I learned in medical school. And so it's been quite a journey. Initially, when this happened, I lost a bunch of patients that didn't like my perspective, my politics, my whatever. And that was very painful. People think I'm brave and courageous, but that was very painful and it wasn't easy. But shortly thereafter, the floodgates opened and like-minded patients from around the country, particularly the greater Newport area, but I have patients all over the country, wanted a like-minded physician. Mm-hmm. And so now my practice is full. I'm not taking on new patients. I just got too busy. And as a result of that, my daughter, who works in social media, said, hey, Pop, you should really start an Instagram account. I'm like, cool. What's Instagram? And so she created this Instagram account for me, gave me the name RX4Liberty. Four is F-O-R, RX for Liberty. And I was now able to reach a broader base of followers, of patients, because my physical practice is closed and I really felt bad that I wasn't able to provide holistic information to a broader audience. So now my Instagram account, RX for Liberty, is really exploding. And this holistic health nurse that worked for me for a year, Stephanie, who now lives in Texas, is my partner on these Instagram on my Instagram account to help me coach and provide additional crunchy information to these followers. And I have a subscriber base. I do telehealth. She does telehealth as well. And having a lot of fun doing that. I record a morning message almost every morning, Monday through Friday. Winston, who loves to be on the camera, say hi, Winston. And it's a holistic health message. I try to keep it non-controversial because various social media outlets will ban you and deplatform you if you're not careful and you're posting stuff about controversial things. So I try to keep it on the straight and narrow about holistic stuff. So that was sort of the roundabout way of how I got into this space and now on a homeopaths podcast talking about alternative holistic care.
Yeah, I think I've found it so refreshing to be able to engage with so many medical doctors and talk to them very frankly about homeopathic medicine, because, you know, for a long time, homeopathy was really, and homeopaths were the pariahs of, you know, healthcare. If
not just homeopaths, Aaron, but chiropractors for a while, even DOs, doctors of osteopathic medicine as well. I mean, anything that isn't allopathic trained is shunned by big pharma.
Because
they want customers. They care more, in my opinion, they care more about profits than they do about health. Now, listen, that's not to say that we don't need pharmaceutical products. We do. I mean, a type 1 diabetic can't live without insulin. So thank God somebody invented insulin and created that. And we need antibiotics from time to time to treat illness, of course. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be labeled too much as anti-pharma, but pharma has controlled so much. We're the only country, the United States, along with New Zealand, that allows direct-to-consumer advertising from the pharmaceutical industry. And you watch, you know, I'm a typical guy. I've got sports on at night, Monday Night Football or whatever. There isn't a sports broadcast now that doesn't have ad after ad after ad from big pharma. Medication to lower your cholesterol, medication to fix erectile dysfunction from the medication that's lowered your cholesterol and has killed your testosterone level.
Right.
Medications to lose weight, never mind that those are actually the problem, not the solution. On and on and on, we are bombarded with propaganda and advertisement to the point where patients come in and they ask for these things. Hey, I just saw this ad. I was watching the Charger game. There's this great ad about Wegovy, Ozempic, Mounjaro. I want to get on it to help me lose weight. I need to lose 20, 30, 50 pounds. Mm-hmm. They have no idea how this stuff works. They don't realize that potentially it has downside and danger. They don't realize that once you're on it, it's very difficult to go off, and on and on and on. It's not just the weight loss drugs, but it's all these drugs. And my goal is to teach patients how to be their own doctor. I've got a course coming up that's going to start in November called Mastering Your Own Health. It's on an organization called IPAC. If you go on my Instagram, again, RX4Liberty, website, same name, rxforliberty.com, you'll have information. It's a 10-week course, an hour a week on a Zoom-like platform, interactive questions and answers. They're recorded, so if you miss one. And it's the first time I've ever done this, but I'm looking forward to trying to put together all my knowledge or lack thereof into a course that people can look at. I want people to stay out of doctor's offices and hospitals. I mean, Aaron, here's the bottom line. Here's what I believe. I think God created us pretty perfect as is. I don't think he made a mistake. So when we read statistics about cardiovascular disease, heart disease, the number one killer in the United States, right underneath that cancer, right underneath that type 2 diabetes and obesity, then the neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia as the top causes of death, that's on us. Mm-hmm. That's not on the creator. And we need to understand why these things happened. I don't know for sure, but I think a lot of this has to do with we have destroyed our food. We have toxified our body. In order to graduate high school in California, this is different in different states. Texas has a personal exemption, but in California, you need to receive about 72 injections of vaccinations in order to graduate high school. Back in the early 1980s, it was about 10 shots. Now it's 72. Mm-hmm. And during that time frame, the amount of chronic disease has exploded. Now it's estimated 60% of our population in the United States has at least one chronic illness, and 40% has two or more. Now, I'm not saying it's all vaccines' faults, but I think in part they are to contribute. Also, all the toxins that we put in our body, from the aluminum under our arms to the fluoride in our mouth to the government water that comes out of our tap, where a government agency is determining the right amount of heavy metals, fluoride and chlorine and arsenic that we're allowed to put into our body. We allow that to happen. Our food supply filled with GMO and glyphosates and so forth. That's not okay. And if we want to eliminate heart disease and cancer and all these other things, we, as an individual, as a sovereign person, need to learn how to take care of ourselves, need to learn what our creator had in mind for us and how to take care of our bodies. I don't know how to do that perfectly, but I know we can do a lot better than what we're doing. That's what my course hopes to teach. And that's what I try to do every day, both in my brick and mortar practice and my presence on social media.
Yeah. And I think that's so much needed. You know, I want to switch gears a little bit to discuss something that I found very interesting. So as the pandemic started, I think there was a lot of questioning coming from the crunchy moms, if you will, primarily because we had gotten to a place of not trusting in pharma, not trusting in governmental agencies, specifically those of us who had been already fighting for medical freedom in various states across the country. You know, so there was already this kind of seed of mistrust, if you will, in the various agencies. And so I do think early on, there were a lot of us, I'm grouping myself in with, you know, the Crunchy Moms group, if you will, in that were very skeptical of what was going on. But what I found so interesting was the way that the messaging really positioned anybody who questioned any of the narratives that were coming out of, you know, the various three-letter agencies and the governments or world governments, if you will, that positioned people who questioned as somehow, you know, far right or, you know, ultra conservative or things like that, which, you know, from an early standpoint, you know, for many, many years, most of the crunchy moms tended actually more to be liberal.
100%.
And so this was such a weird juxtaposition for me. And so I'm curious to know, you know, I know your podcast deals with the intersection of politics and medicine, which, you know, I don't think prior to COVID, most people would have thought of as some, you know, crossroads, if you will. You know, healthcare is for everybody. And we all have the right to make our own decisions regarding our own healthcare, or so we thought. So what is that? Where do you see that intersection? And maybe just some musings on the reason behind it. Why did we get ourselves into this place of like politics and medicine colliding in this very strange space?
You know, you describe it really well. I mean, you think about the 60s, all the 60s hippies, you know, don't trust anybody older than 30 was one of the expressions, the Woodstock generation and so forth. Those were a lot of folks that were left of center, all the, you know, the crunchy people. And now suddenly I think as a result of mistrust of government, there's now more crunchy people coming forward on the right, where we have in common with the left that we're very skeptical of government in our lives. And I think, so that's where that's coming from. And then enter COVID, where medical voices were shut down because they didn't like that we were going against a government narrative. So when I would talk about treatment protocols for COVID, with some of the repurposed medications, hydroxychloroquine, and then later ivermectin. And pharmacies were refusing to dispense my prescriptions. Never seen that before in my career. Mm-hmm. A prescription, it's not a controlled drug like a narcotic. It has a safety record. They've been around for 50, 60 years. It would be very difficult to harm somebody with these drugs if I wanted to. Yet the pharmacists were saying, I'm sorry, we can't dispense that. We can't do that. They would be happy to dispense a prescription for OxyContin or Vicodin without questioning, without asking about diagnosis. But if I prescribed ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine, they would say, no, I'm sorry, doctor. So they, the three-letter agencies, the pharmacy board and so forth, interjected themselves between the patient and the doctor. And I think that created a lot of animosity with some of us. And we realized that when you start looking at it, where the funding from the CDC comes from and the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, 50% of their funding comes from the industries that they're supposed to be overseeing. They're supposed to have the back of the American people, and they don't. And so rightfully so now, the FDA, the CDC, and the National Institutes of Health are all being viewed very skeptically as whether we can trust them. And then I didn't know this. I didn't investigate it. I just assumed that these were legit organizations. Maybe I have a disagreement here and there, but they were legit, high paid, high powered academic scientists that were doing work. But then you look at it and you realize, well, wait a second. Almost every study, medical study in the United States that's conducted is sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. Go, well, that's interesting. Why is that? Shouldn't the National Institutes of Health or the taxpayers be funding these studies to try to discover? Well, no, pharma's funding them. And then you look at the doctors that conduct the research in these academic centers, and they are often consultants from the pharma company, and they're getting paid from the grant to do this study. And you go, wow, well, wow, doctors, you know, they're ethical, you know, conflict of interest. I'm sure they can see that. You go, okay, well, what about the results of the studies? Well, the results of the studies are written up by pharma consultants. And then they're published in the journals, many of which your listeners know, New England Journal of Medicine, probably the most prestigious, well, it used to be in the United States, Journal of the American Medical Association, JAMA, the number one journal in the world, probably the most prestigious, The Lancet out of Great Britain. And then you look at those journals and you see, wow, you know, they're surviving on pharma advertising. So you flip through one of them and, you know, every few pages, there's a full page ad for some other pharma product. And so they're not going to publish a critical article about a pharma drug or a pharma company. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. So you have this insidious relationship of big pharma and medical research that just clouds everything. So I don't even know what to believe anymore. So for example, Aaron, about a month ago, something like that, in the Wall Street Journal. I get the Wall Street Journal, read it like the editorial section, whatever. It's a source of news. There is a front page article, new weight loss drug shown to reduce cardiovascular disease by 25%. I'm like, really? Let me read that thing. Mm-hmm. So I start reading it and it says, Novo Nordisk, that's the name of the company out of Sweden that makes several of these new weight loss drugs. Mm-hmm. So it says Novo Nordisk sponsored a study. Skeptical immediately, that the result showed a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease by 25%. I'm like, huh, isn't that interesting? Next paragraph. This study has not been published or peer reviewed yet. I'm like, hasn't been published or peer reviewed yet, yet Wall Street Journal, you're putting it on the front page and your title suggests that this drug can reduce cardiovascular risk by 25%. Why are you doing that? That's kind of fraudulent. Keep reading the article. Some Swedish doctor whose name I can't pronounce, you know, Dr. Swedish guy states, isn't it wonderful that this drug seems to reduce cardiovascular risk by 25%? Next line. Dr. Swedish guy is a paid consultant by Novo Nordisk. This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And what they never tell you is the difference between absolute risk and relative risk. Mm-hmm. So most of these studies report relative risk. And what that means is just a simple example. Let's assume you're doing a study on drug X. You have 100 people that get the drug, 100 people that get placebo. In the drug group, one person dies. In the placebo group, three people die. And then the company concludes the drug reduces cardiovascular disease by 25% or whatever the statistics are. I can't do the math. You go, wow, isn't that fantastic? But what they don't tell you is you have to treat 100 people in order to save one life. Mm-hmm. And the other 99 receive no benefit, and you can't figure out ahead of time which of the one out of the 99 receive the benefit. And the other 99 get all the potential side effects from the drug. So it's basically statistical fraud with many of these studies that are put forward in the public that give you some statistical number of reduction of risk. They never tell you the backstory. They never tell you the number needed to treat in order to have the desired drug effect. They never tell you that. And they don't want to tell you that. They want customers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just had a conversation with Dr. Pierre Corey where we went over all of that with the case with ivermectin and what was going on with so many of the fraudulent studies with regard to the use of ivermectin. But not only that, you know, you brought up something that's so important. I think ultimately the idea of the left wing, if you will, propagandizing for pharma was so outrageous to me throughout this whole thing. It was almost unbelievable. And I started questioning, you know, are these people being paid? Because ultimately, it was so egregious to me. And I do think there was some of that going on. I'll get into that in just a minute. But ultimately, you know, I think people just were so enwrapped in this idea of fear and almost like hungry for more, if you will. It was such a weird thing to me that I don't fully understand to this day, but almost like an addiction to fear.
Well, yeah. I mean, you should get my podcast co-host on. He wrote a book about this.
Yeah.
Pandemic of Fear.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's sort of, you know, people that you continue to see wearing a mask, for example. You know, I flew recently as up in Truckee, California, outside of Lake Tahoe. Oh, just gorgeous country. Mm-hmm. And I fly Southwest mostly. And there is a handful of people on the plane wearing a mask. And Mark McDonald and I wrote about this. I have a Substack, RX for Liberty. So does he, Dissident MD. And I said, listen, if you're wearing a mask because you want to protect yourself, that makes no sense from a medical standpoint, because the pores of the mask relative to the size of a virus is like trying to stop a mosquito with a chain link fence. It's crystal clear. If you're wearing a mask because you're ill and you're altruistic and want to protect the public, well, stay the hell home. First of all, the mask doesn't offer enough protection to prevent you from spreading your illness to people you're sitting next to on an airplane. Yeah, it'll stop a sneeze. It'll stop a cough. But the same thing in reverse, the pores of the mask relative to the size of a virus. How selfish are you that you're ill, but you put a mask on thinking you're going to protect me and you yet still go in a crowded public place? So if it's not those two things, why are people continuing to wear a mask? It's sort of like, I think this is correct. And I asked Mark, who's a psychiatrist, it's like somebody with obsessive compulsive disorder. You know, the person who has to check the door handle 8 times to make sure that it's locked, or will go back to the stove 8 times to make sure that the stove is turned off. And they do that because it calms their anxiety from obsessive OCD.
Right.
There's other habits that they do, and they do that because they have anxiety if they don't do that. So similarly, people are now so traumatized from the fear that a mask quiets their anxiety and their fear. It's a type of neurosis. And I think that's part of it that Mark talks about. And so I have great sympathy when I see people with masks on. The fear that they must be experiencing that allows them to continue to wear a mask must be overwhelming. And then there are probably some people where it's more of a symbolic gesture of righteousness to them. I've got a mask on. I'm going to show the world, you know, we're in this together, the memes on social media. I got my vaccine. We're in this together kind of thing. And I think there's an element of that as well. Mm-hmm. And so this is like post-traumatic stress that's going to go on for a long time. And the media continues to hype it, whether mm-hmm. it's the next variant that comes out that they scare people with, the new COVID shot that just came out, and now they're pushing it with fear, backed with big pharma advertising. So this is going to go on for a long time, and then it's not going to be the next pandemic or infection. I think it will be something like global warming emergency, the same kind of thing. Instill the fear, advertise the solution, get people so involved in it that they have no option to quiet their anxiety than to comply with whatever the media and the government is asking them to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So interestingly, actually my son and I were watching a YouTube video the other day talking about some things going on. So currently we're dealing with the situation in Israel and Hamas. And there was a YouTube video my son showed me, which basically showed how people were incentivized to post random photos or videos that were actually had nothing to do with the situation in Israel. And unfortunately, people believe that this is true. And it comes back to something I wanted to ask you about. So much of this is going on. And, you know, I don't claim to understand the intricacies of it. However, I know there is definitely a problem, specifically when it comes to putting out misinformation, if you will. But in my view, you know, we used to have tabloids at the supermarket, and you knew you knew that the alien baby that, you know, some celebrity had just birthed, like, wasn't a real story. Like, you knew that it was, you know, tongue in cheek, that it was satire, that it was, you know, it was funny to laugh at while you're checking out, but, you know, it wasn't something that, you know, you took with as absolute truth. And I think nowadays, you know, we're seeing things come up on social media. And number one, we're so conditioned to take things in bite-sized chunks. And so we don't, you know, read past the headline in most cases, like you were talking about with the Wall Street Journal. But I know that you were recently involved in a lawsuit. It was against the state. Am I correct in saying that?
The lawsuit was a bill that was passed in California and signed into law by our governor, Governor Newsom, who may very well be our next president, God forbid. Mm-hmm. And it was called AB, which stands for Assembly Bill 2098. And the bill basically gave the medical board carte blanche to take my license away or other doctors if we spread what they deem as being, quote, misinformation or disinformation. And that was defined by the medical board as anything that was contrary to the standard of care. Now, during COVID, the standard of care was developing and changing rapidly. I mean, for example, I give a talk called COVID-19, A Lesson in Government Tyranny, and I have quotes directly from various healthcare people, including President Biden, Anthony Fauci, the CEO of Pfizer, and others, who basically said, if you get this vaccine, you have nothing to worry about, that you won't get ill. The CEO of Pfizer said, there are no variants that can break through our vaccine, and on and on and on. So that's what many people believed early in the pandemic, only to find out that the COVID vaccine neither stops somebody from getting infected, nor stops somebody from transmitting the illness. We were saying this early on.
Sorry to interrupt, but I found that so egregious that when they were questioned about, Pfizer was questioned about this, that they said that they had not studied the transmission of illness for people post-vaccination. And that to me was so egregious because that was the platform that they were using
100%.
To push this propaganda on so many people and force them to receive a medical experiment.
Propaganda, and not to mention the thousands of military soldiers that were discharged because they refused to get vaccinated. The people that lost their jobs, like my nurse, Stephanie, because she refused to be vaccinated with an experimental product. And so, listen, I don't care whether somebody gets vaccinated with the COVID vax or the flu shot or whatever else they want. They should have a right to that if they want to do that after receiving informed consent. And nobody receives informed consent, literally nobody. You walk into a pharmacy, Walmart, Save-On, CVS, whatever, and you'll see advertisements on the wall, like for the shingles vaccine. They'll have a picture of somebody with a gnarly shingles rash on their face. And it'll say, don't be this guy, get your new shingles vax. You walk up to the counter and say, I'd like to have a shingles vax. And it's free, by the way, just mm-hmm. show them your Medicare card or whatever. And you go into a little side office and they give you a shingles vaccine. You're not given informed consent. You're not given a copy of the package insert. You're just given the vaccine and the money transfer. So I spend a lot of time looking at package inserts. So, you know, for example, here's a package insert. You know, if you're listening to it on a podcast and you can't see this picture, I'm showing a, you know, a 7-point font package insert for one of the vaccines. I think this one is the hepatitis B vaccine. What are the ingredients? What's the post-marketing study show? What are the potential side effects? No, you're not given this information. I think there should be a warning on every vaccine. Mm-hmm. You know how if you go to buy a pack of cigarettes at 7-Eleven or whatever, there's like this cancer warning on it. If you smoke this product, you may die from cancer, whatever, appropriately so. I think on a vaccine, there should be a warning label that says something like, the vaccine you are about to receive has not been placebo control tested. The manufacturer is immune from all liability. If you are injured by this product, the manufacturer is not liable. Receive at your own risk. Something like that.
Right.
Now, as listeners are hearing this, they're saying, Barky, you just said it's not placebo control tested. What do you mean by that? Well, if you look at the package insert of many of these products, often what the pharmaceutical company does with the new hepatitis B, I haven't posted on this, but I will. They don't test the new hepatitis B against a placebo. Group gets hepatitis B, the placebo group gets saline, and then they follow them. They don't do that.
Right.
They test it against the old vaccine, and then they compare them. And in many cases with some of the vaccines, they'll take the chemical that's in the vaccine that includes adjuvants, things that stimulate our immune system, preservatives like phenol or aluminum, et cetera. And they'll put that in the placebo group also. And the only thing that will be different between the control that gets the vaccine and the placebo that gets whatever the chemical is they simply remove the viral particle that's designed for our immune system to see. But it's the same toxic chemicals that are in it. So they follow these two groups and they go, look, they both had about the same side effects. Have a nice day, safe and effective.
Right.
That's the fraud of the vaccine industry. And by the way, I don't care that they do this. I think it's wrong, mm-hmm. but I just want the public to be informed. So right. when you go in and you request your pneumonia shot, shingle shot, flu shot, whatever it is, you should be given a disclosure form that shows you how the product was brought to market and what are the studies. Placebo versus control. What are the ingredients in the placebo and control? What are the post-marketing studies that show the side effects? Then buyer beware. If you want this shot, by all means, get it.
Right.
But only after you've received informed consent.
Absolutely. And I think the market will level out at a certain point. You know, once we reach that tipping point, when enough people are educated on this, they will understand the risk. Risk and those that still want to move forward and you know, take any kind of medical procedure, that's totally fine. But as long as it's up to them. But that also kind of segues back into what I derailed you from initially, which is that this idea of this medical misinformation bill in the state of California. So where are you at now with that?
Yeah, thanks for getting back to that. So Mark McDonald and I sued the state of California, specifically the Attorney General and the Medical Board of California, claiming that this was a violation of our constitutional right for free speech. Because basically what it meant was if a patient came in and wanted to talk about anything to do with COVID or even not COVID things, what I would need to do first is understand what the state of California's narrative and belief is about whatever I was going to discuss and make sure that my opinion was in alignment with the government's opinion. Because if I said something different as a second opinion, first opinion, third opinion, and it was different than the government narrative, technically they could claim I was spreading misinformation or disinformation and take my license away. So we sued. We thought it was bad for patients to muzzle a doctor's information, and it was certainly bad for doctors. So we sued. Our case was heard in court. We appealed it to the Ninth Circuit. We had a wonderful hearing in the Ninth Circuit about a month and a half ago. The judge primarily asked questions of the state, not of our attorneys. They questioned why this law was necessary. Doesn't the medical board already have the power to go after doctors for doing things that they're not supposed to do? Why was this necessary? Doesn't it prevent appropriate second opinions and so forth from being expressed? So all the questioning seemed as if the judge was in alignment with what our concerns were. Then what happened is along the way, Governor Newsom signed another law that repealed 2098. So we haven't actually been given a formal ruling. We want the ruling. Recently, the Ninth Circuit reached out to our attorneys and said, listen, would you guys, since this 2098 has been basically overturned, would you withdraw your motion? And we said no, because the law, first of all, doesn't take effect until January. Mm-hmm. And right now it's October. So there's still several months where we could be found liable or whatever and sure. have our license taken away. And second, we want a ruling so this never happens again. And the court came back to us and said, well, what if we stipulate that this will not be enforced over the next couple months until it actually takes effect in January? And again, we said, well, thank you for that. But no, we're not interested in that. We want a judge ruling that shows this law was unconstitutional. So the legislature and the governor will never try to sign this into law again. And this precedent will be right. available for the rest of the states as well. So other states don't try to do this. Now, we don't have high expectations that the judge is going to actually make a ruling. Often what they do is because the law is moot at this point, at least it will be in January, that the judge may not rule. He'll just, you know, sit on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they don't, they judges don't often like to go against the governor, you know, and rule against the governor. So he may not give a ruling. We hope he does. We hope that he realizes that this is a constitutional issue. This is not a political issue, and that he will rule on it. But we're still waiting to hear on that.
Yeah. And I think it leads back to this whole idea that has been propagated a lot recently in the media, especially that science is somehow consensus, and that consensus is actually what makes something scientific fact, when in fact, the opposite is the truth, you know, as we know, you know, as anybody who has ever read a scientific paper or taken, you know, high school chemistry or biology would know that, but that no, you know, there's been many things that, you know, once were accepted as consensus, and, you know, it's not until somebody becomes the dissenting voice that they finally decide, oh, wait a minute, actually, this is incorrect, and we need to go back to the drawing board. So, you know, I think that's hugely important. And a lot of, I think, what's going on in today's world can be traced back to some of that narrative as well.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it wasn't too long ago when we were using leeches and bleeding people to treat illness.
Right.
That was
right.
The consensus at the time. Now we know that's right. Ridiculous. I can only right. imagine 100 years from now, they're going to look back at what we do and scratch their head and wonder why and how we did that. And I think it's dangerous when we view consensus, enough scientists, enough doctors that all agree that this seems to be the right thing, that we then just adopt it as if it's proven. And I think that's very dangerous. And especially when the science is so biased and filled with conflict of interest, as we've talked about with mm-hmm. the pharmaceutical industry's influence and the government agencies that are being funded by the pharmaceutical industry and on, that every study I see now, I question. I go, who funded it?
Right.
Who funded the researchers that did the study? Who funded the person that wrote up the study? Who was funding the journals where this was published? Have they actually released the study data itself? Almost always no. They give you the summary, but they don't actually release the data itself so you can scrutinize who were the patients and how was this study run and so forth. And so I now have difficulty believing much of what I read in the medical literature these days because of what I've learned over the last few years.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Dr. Barkey, we are reaching that time where we ask our guests the 8 questions, the dreaded 8 questions, or maybe not so dreaded, but and for those of you listening, these are our 8 rapid fire questions we ask every single guest at the Remedy Revolution podcast. So Dr. Barkey, are you ready?
I'm ready. And just for your audience, I have not been privy to what these questions are ahead of time. So
fire away, Erin. All right. if you could choose only one natural remedy for the rest of your life, what would it be?
That's a great question. A particular product?
Anything. It could be, a product.
Organic food.
There we go. Yeah. Nice. Or food, as we used to call it, you know, 100 years ago.
Right.
Tell us something most people don't know about you.
Well, I love cats. And boy, what they don't know about me, I'm pretty transparent with patients, with my followers on Instagram. So I'm not sure that there's not a lot they don't know. I enjoy an occasional cigar and whiskey. I don't share that with too many people.
Ah, there we go. If I were to compile a playlist of happy music, what song would you suggest be added?
I've been enjoying a lot of Christian music, and there's one I really like called by Bethel Music called "Slave of Fear," and so that one I enjoy. That I often play that when I'm out running.
Nice. What's your favorite guilty pleasure?
I love chips.
You and me both.
I know. I would say Mexican food, chips and salsa.
Yeah. What's the most influential book you've ever read?
There's a lot of them. The one that popped into my head is by Viktor Frankl called Man's Search for Meaning. Mm-hmm. He's a psychiatrist who lived during the Holocaust in a concentration camp, and he shares his perspective on how he survived that by visualizing the future and having something to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the classics for sure. What does the word revolution mean to you?
Well, it means to me what I and many fellow physicians and followers are doing. And we are relearning what it means to be alive and to be a sovereign citizen and to be a God-fearing creature and how to take care of ourselves.
And what does the word remedy mean to you?
It is a way in which our bodies will naturally heal when we support it with proper nutrients, proper prayer, proper mental state to eat clean, to live clean, and to think clean.
Mm-hmm. And if you could impart one piece of wisdom onto our listeners, what would that be?
Challenge everything. Do your own research. Be careful about the words like consensus and settled science.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I could not agree more. It has been a pleasure, Dr. Barkey. Just as a reminder for everybody listening, you can find Dr. Barkey on Instagram at RX4Liberty, also at RX4Liberty.com. And he also does his podcast with Dr. Mark McDonald titled Informed Dissent, available on all podcasting platforms. Thank you so much, Dr. Barkey. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Erin. Thanks for having me. And I look forward to having you on an Instagram Live where we'll talk about homeopathy.
That sounds fantastic. Thank you. Take care, y'all. With hope as a guiding light, through darkest days we'll fight the night. With a whole lot of passion, with a whole lot of truth, Remedy Revolution is here for you.